Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Hi, welcome to Linux Link Radio. Today's episode, we're going to talk about memory profilers and kernel profiling. I'm here with Jeremiah Lott.
Hello.
He's sitting in for Maciej. He was at a show in, Nuremberg. So he got to take the week off and then he's visiting some family. So we have Jeremiah filling in for him. He was gracious enough to do that for us.
Yeah, I'll try my best to
fill his spot. Jeremiah wasn't entirely willing. There was some bribery involved.
That is true. I don't know if bribery is the right word, but arm twisting or something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't really count for bribery because I don't plan on giving you what I bribed you. You know, I'm such a cheapskate. So anyway, we wanted to talk about profiling and why embedded engineers care about profiling. And a lot of it boils down to getting the most efficient use out of your hardware. You know, because when you do desktop, you did desktop work, right?
Yeah, that's a lot. Big part of my background actually is desktop UI type work.
Yeah. So before you got into, that's one of those things that I did the same thing. So before you got into embedded work, hardware was almost something you didn't think about ever.
Yeah, it's actually kind of the opposite. You've got so much that you don't want to take the time to optimize code if it's not going to make a noticeable difference when the user actually plugs it in. But for embedded, it does, and it makes a cost difference. So that's a big part of it too.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of our customers are bumping up against installed bases of hardware, so they may need to get an upgrade out or something like that, and they simply can't get more memory or more cycles without, you know, going out to the field and replacing 10,000 appliances.
Right.
So a lot of it has to do with making do with what you have. And in which case you want to do that as intelligently, I'm making quotes with my fingers, right? Intelligently as possible. And so you really can't get out there and make changes where you think there's problems. You have to make changes where there certainly are problems.
Right.
And that's where the whole embedded, well, not the whole embedded, but that's where the profiling tools come into play. Because at least that way you can poke around and make intelligent changes on your system. I know we're going to do, for this, we're not going to spend a lot of time. Believe it or not, we actually prepared, right, before we turn on the microphone?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, up to 30 seconds, right?
Yeah.
And so I know we want to talk about maybe even a minute. I think like three times the preparation we normally put into a podcast. So we wanted to talk a little bit about what you do out in user land, but we wanted to concentrate more on what happens in the kernel. Because I know we've talked before about different sort of memory profilers and performance profilers for things running in user land, but we really didn't spend time on the kernel.
Okay.
So we want to dig in there. So that'll be about how things divide. So I know one of the first projects out there for profiling Linux was LTT, the Linux Trace Toolkit, right? And that was out there, I think, since 2003 or 2004.
And yeah.
Yeah, and it came across. It was a set of patches, right, that you would go in and add to the kernel that would expose these performance counters that were, in essence, sitting there on the chip already. And then every once in a while, a process would come by and would sweep up the performance counters and put them somewhere, right? And then you could track how often a certain counter was tickled over a certain range of time. And I know that project was out there, and then eventually it was subsumed, right? It didn't get a lot of activities. One of those projects that sort of went out there and died on the vine.
It never quite got the acceptance from kind of the core yep. Linux developers, so it couldn't get in the mainline kernel.
Yeah.
And if it's not in that mainline and whoever is pushing really loses it, then things tend to die.
Yeah, it was disappointing because you would look out there and it's like, well, I've made all these patches and they're for the whatever kernel. And then the kernel moved fast enough and he had just trouble getting the patches synchronized. And
right.
It was really disappointing because it was decently, I wouldn't say anything inherently wrong, right, with the way that was done. So that was eventually subsumed, right? I'm going to call it subsumed. I wouldn't even call it forked, but let's say replaced by the LTTNG project. And that's a lot, I shouldn't say it's a lot, but that is something that's now actually in the kernel for most kernel releases.
It's certainly moving that way. I know. I don't know if it's totally in the kernel, but stuff from it's moving into the kernel, so it's going the right direction for, unlike before.
Yeah, he is getting a lot more acceptance.
Yeah.
So the chances are, if you get a kernel from most vendors, not all, but most vendors, they will have the LTTNG patches in there. Not true for our architectures. There's still, I don't know if you visit, I should have written down before I came in. See, we put another minute into preparation, right? But if you visit the site, there is a description of exactly what chips are covered, because a lot of it is architecture dependent, and also where you can get the patch list from. So that's what's happening on the LTT side. And then there's also been a project that's been running for the kernel for years now, right? Which is OProfile. And OProfile does a slightly different job, right, than LTTNG. And that's actually been, I think, well accepted. If I recall, that's the patches for that or any sort of changes kernel land are already in the kernel.
That is in the mainline kernel. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Red Hat was one of the big pushers behind that. And yeah. It is in there now.
Yeah. So if you're looking for that sort of profiling, but the difference, I think one of the things that I get, you know, when I talk to people, so the phone rings and someone will say, well, what do I need and what's the difference? And, you know, one or the other, right? So when I talk to them, I look at the difference between the two as like a OProfile tells you how time is running or how the kernel spends its time on an aggregate basis. So it'll tell you it's spent 35% of its time in this routine. Of course, that's a gross exaggeration, right? Probably spends 30% of its time idle for all intents and purposes. Or it'll spend 25% of its time with this certain event. Or inside this chunk of code, you have these number of faults that occur over the run of a program. But the difference is, okay, so that's what OProfile tells you. Yeah. So it's very aggregate. It's pretty high level. LTT, you put this best on it before doing this. That shows you sort of like a timeline.
Yeah, I usually think of, you know, if you want statistics about what's happening in various you know, parts of your code, OProfile can tell you, you know, on this line, 25% of the time, the branch is mispredicted or something along those lines. If you want to know exactly which time the branch was mispredicted and what happened immediately before and immediately after in that timeline, and you want a real, you know, almost like it's not like a step debugger, but almost like the same kind of thing if you were stepping through the code, you want that timeline, then you need something more along the lines of the trace toolkit, LTT.
So, I mean, the LTTNG really does give you a better, I should say, like whole system appearance. So, because there's a lot of, because, you know, for most people still work on uniprocess systems, right? So everything is serializing on that processor. And then LTT lets you see how that time is being allocated with respect to the other tasks that are running at the same time. So you can spot things like priority inversion if they happen, or if you see a task that you didn't think about correctly and you see that it's waiting on IO for, you know, long blocks of time and therefore getting interrupted, you can get a better feel on how to tune your system.
Yeah, particularly I think useful for when you instead of thinking that something's always happening, that there's some exceptional case where there's a particularly large block that's happening. I think the trace toolkit would help you pick that exception out of what otherwise may be a statistically well-performing function. If you just look at the overall statistics, it may be pretty good, but that one time when things are critical and it's happening, it runs really slow. And an overall statistics of the system wouldn't really reveal that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely kind of pros and cons to both. And of course, at the same time, if that function is called 1,000 times or more, you can't view each of those individually. So there are times when you would want a more aggregate view of how that function is performing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know one of the other handy things about LTTNG is it has a really cool output. Well, a cool is, I will decide whether it's cool or not. I know most people look at it and think, well, what am I seeing, right? But the thing that displays the timeline, but you can do things too, like very easily spot interrupt handlers that are masking interrupts for too long, because you can see literally all activity come to the system, come to a halt on the system, right? As it does whatever it does that's too slow. And I know for folks that are out there that are doing, I don't know, making quotes with my fingers, real time work, that's a huge advantage. And to try to spot that by either running grep or, you know, otherwise examining your code really isn't obvious.
Yeah, I mean, definitely trying to stab in the dark without one of those tools, it really is kind of get to that. You know, you start looking. I know a lot of times just doing that, even with a desktop work, you know, something's running just too slow. You know, you get the kind of end testing, and then you start looking through your code and trying to guess where it is. And I've done that before, change stuff, can't get anything to work. You bring out the tool, and of course, it's in a totally different piece of code, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're changing code that just is completely, you know, it might probably was really inefficient, but it was efficient enough to get the job done compared to the rest of the code. So it didn't really make a material effect.
No, I agree. That's why those are so critical, because, again, going back to, you know, the folks that we work with, efficiency is of utmost importance whenever you have to meet a deadline or you simply can't change the platform that you're running on and you need to get more work done with the same level of resources. And then we also wanted to you know, I did want to mention, hold on here, look at my notes, that LTT and NG both come with graphical profilers. So they both have this text mode output that I know a lot of folks will just run through with sort.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But it's really beneficial in the way that both of them work in that they produce some sort of output that you can grab and view on a different machine than when the test ran. So, I mean, like typical OProfile usage case, right? You run OProfile, you scrape data via OP control into a file, and then you take the file somewhere else and open it up in a viewer.
Right.
And yeah. it's a bit of a pain on, and you know, if you're in that sort of situation doing that testing, it's probably to your advantage to bite the bullet in NFS mount a file system if you can afford the space, so you don't have to shuttle the file on and off. But both of those have been really well designed so that you can take the data that comes out right as a text file and then schlep it over to another machine, which actually can run a GUI.
That's definitely a major consideration. I know, we've had to evaluate tools and when that use case is particularly difficult, it makes it pretty hard to use it on some of those embedded systems. Some of them are just not conducive to even a text processing. If it has to do a lot of processing in order for the display, can run into problems. So,
and LTTNG is the same way. It's really respectful in the fact that it'll go out. I think it creates it creates a relay FS file system, which memory wise, it's a very small memory footprint memory system. It's small enough. You could probably even leave it in the kernel if you wanted to, when you shipped your device. And works the same way. It queues up a bunch of data in memory and a big circular buffer, and then you can snarf that off that file handle into something else that's a little bit more convenient to work with.
Right.
And so having the viewers separate really makes it, I wouldn't call it a pleasure, but it certainly makes it a heck of a lot easier whenever you're working on a system that doesn't have a terminal or anything like that right. You have to shell into. So for both of those, I should have written down, I know oprofile.org is the OProfile site, but LTTNG is something entirely different, right?
Yeah, I'm not the kind of person who types those things straight into the bar. I search engine the name of the project every time I go. So,
yeah,
those guys must love me. Yeah, but I see their ads every time. But anyway, I don't know it. That's the short form.
Yeah, same with me. Just Google for LTTNG. Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you click on all the ads? I always click on all the ads too.
I don't even see them. So from that perspective, they don't love me, but I guess they make money whether I see them or not. No, I got to click on them probably. But no, I never click on them.
No. Sometimes I do.
Yeah. Just for fun.
Yeah. Well, got to do something, right, for entertainment. So the other thing to think about is over in user land. So let's say we'll pretend the kernel is completely running. One of these tools become handy, even with OProfile and LTTNG, is that you can, in one respect, see the kernel as it runs normally, right?
Right.
And then another use case for these is to run whatever your application is so that it correctly tickles some problems you'd expect to see through both OProfile and LTTNG. And so one of the handy things, at least about OProfile, is that you can almost watch things go from user land, right, into the kernel and back out again.
Yeah,
and get a feel for how that works.
I don't know if you can, again, it's not a timeline thing, so it's not like you can watch a single thread of control going back and forth. But what you can definitely see is if you run your program, you see the direct effect of your program in terms of syscalls in the kernel. So, it helps you to see that kind of time. I mean, that's one of the advantages that they always tout about it, especially if you have a system that's not just a single executable, but maybe you got a bunch of processes, a server running, all of it's going at the same time, just to see how all those things interact at the same time. And really both LTTNG and OProfile, the way that they work with the kernel level support,
lets
you profile a whole system as opposed to profiling a single application.
Yeah, well, I get more use out of OProfile than LTT. So that's usually my starting, it's my frame of reference point there.
I've certainly used it more.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's probably an effect that's simply been out longer.
Right? Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me is I just have more opportunity to use it, so know a little better. But
yeah, and then other thing over in user land, we have GProf, right? That's sort of like the analogous tool for profiling, right?
Sure. Yeah, just kind of when it's run, and that's what they contrast the system wide profiling GProf. You get that profile just this application and pretend like nothing else is going on. Profile in isolation, and of course, purely user space.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you can do things. I know you can with GProf, if you have the right libraries, you can link and at least see some performance counters for your standard C library. But as soon as a syscall is made, poof, you have.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see how long it takes but to come back, but you don't get much beyond that for sure.
Yeah, and I know a lot of folks that use GProf. I mean, the first thing they do is they compile up their program and they run and they get enough data and then they press Control C.
Right.
So you have to be a little bit picky about your profiling. And the other thing, at least I noticed about GProf, this is, again, being an embedded guy, is that you can get sometimes decent reads on how a system behaves in proportion just by running it on your desktop, if you can afford to do that.
Sure, yeah.
Harness-wise. I mean, it may run slower on your embedded system, but you'll certainly have the same proportions. Very infrequently do you really run across compiler issues that shift how things will run. Right.
I mean, yeah, it debugs your program in absence of resource constraints, though, which, you know, if you're going down to the actual embedded target, that can obviously have a huge impact just because the same resources might not be available. Timing might be different.
Oh, yeah.
But I agree that it does help you. The same way that just running it and seeing if it works on your desktop lets you get out bugs, profiling it on your desktop will help you determine a lot of the problems that a program would have are not specific to any particular architecture way of doing so.
Yeah, and I know too, even though it's to me somewhat paradox, is that the best way to run the profiler is when you turn off all optimization anyway, right? So it's going to be generating.
Again, yeah, that's a
least
good way,
efficient code,
right? Well, that's a good way to analyze the logic of your program as opposed to, you know, in this kind of a generic case, you know. On your desktop, not the same architecture. Forget about, you know, what might be architecture specific optimizations and kind of the generic, you know, logic of your program and whether it's working in an optimal way.
No, I agree. I agree totally. And that follows your, because that's what we see for most of our customers, is the fact that they'll do work on their desktop, and that's their pseudo target, because for the most part the interface is the same, right? Even if they have, you know, USB devices or who knows what, they model their desktop to match their board and then deploy later.
Yeah, at least for a subset of stuff, that makes a lot of sense. So
yeah, and then we also have, it's one other thing is heat profiling, which is another little variant of profiling that tells you how efficient things are allocated on and off the stack, and if you're leaking memory.
Sure, to both profiling and kind of memory heat debugging, dynamic memory debugging. Make sure that you're not making mistakes that will either leak memory or might result in kind of illegal pointers. That tends to be, you know, another completely user space problem, or the other tools at least. But make sure you don't free stuff and then try to access it later, which may or may not work.
Oh, yeah.
On lots of situations. So,
yeah. And you also, yeah, I know that the other constraint we have our customers, so like a typical customer requirement is like, well, it needs to run for 4 days straight or 8 days straight. And so even if they're leaking, you know, if they have one allocation that leaks every once in a while, they'll find themselves out of memory too fast.
Right.
And instead of them trying to hunt through the code and looking, you run the tool. And
right. You can run it for an hour and it leaks 10 bytes. Then, you know, if you run it for 4 days, it's going to release, you know, leak an unacceptable amount. Right.
I mean, so I know we did a past podcast. You weren't, I don't think, I know we did it, Macha and I did it together. We talked about some, you know, heap debuggers, things like mpatrol, electric fence, and dmalloc and memcheck. There's a whole big collection of them out there. It seems like the more I look, right? So every day, every time I go out and look, I find like one or two extra ones. They almost come out of the woodwork.
I mean, that's an old idea. You know, that problem has been around for a long time. And so certainly they haven't changed too much. And people either just write them themselves or the same ones, you know, they get ported to new OSs. But the concept is very, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to my boss and he hasn't been a programmer for quite a while. And then when I told him how these things work, he said, that's exactly the same way we used to do it, you know? So, yeah, things definitely haven't changed.
Well, I know we were looking at them here for various reasons, right? And we found a couple of the tools were popular in use and last changed in the Clinton administration.
Yeah, things that hadn't been changed in quite a while, but still seem to really be very stable, still working and still in use, despite the fact that there's not a lot of maintenance on the core product still going on. So
yeah, that's actually really cool if you think about it. The design implementation is that universal, right?
Right.
That manages this.
Well, the other thing you look at is a lot of them work on huge list of OSs, compilers. You know, it is really a very generic optimization, or not optimization, but a very generic architecture, the way it works,
yeah,
that it can be ported to so many different, you know, systems.
Yeah. And most of them work. I mean, you're not really, well, you look at it, think about patching, right? You really just patch the alloc and free family of functions, right? Because I know
that. Yeah, in fact, a lot of them, they can do it. You just relink it. I mean, you just link it to a different function and they're binary compatible.
Oh, cool.
Right. So, in fact, some of them you can even do it at runtime. Now, a lot of them also have a lot of the kind of nice features that if you do write your program, actually know that it's going to be running under the thing and, you know, pound define mdebug one and add a little extra code or call their special header file. It can give you a lot more feedback.
Yeah.
But there is some feedback a lot of them can give you either just by relinking the program without compiling it, or by changing the dynamic link path so that it picks up the you know, when it's dynamically linking malloc, it picks it up from the memory debugger instead of from libc.
Oh, cool. So that means it's almost a practical solution, depending upon the size of the library, to ship that library on your root file system, if you can afford it space-wise.
Yeah, or at a minimum, you know, provide it as something that can be added to the system and then run. It is something that you could basically have a running system, get this library on there somewhere, restart the processes linking against that library, and at least get some data back about what's going on that main system.
Yeah.
Not as much as if you ran it in the full kind of debugging. The biggest problem would be a lot of them, to get back useful information, you got to get debugging symbols for it.
Yeah.
So, but some of them are like the debugger. You can have the debugging symbols on the host, get the addresses, port them over, you know, have it interpret them later time. So.
Yeah, I know it's really cool. And I know it said first, so the more you look, I just found another one. It was called Duma, I know it's an electric fence fork.
It is electric fence was never really like an official project. It was just kind of a C file that was out there, you know, and
yeah.
People would take it and modify it and then repost it. And, you know, there was never like, you know, I guess you could go to the original author's site to get the original copy, but there was never really like a project where people collaborated.
Yeah.
And Duma was kind of an attempt to take all the changes and everything that people had and make it into a centralized project on SourceForge and,
yeah,
you know, have an official version. But it's based on definitely the same concept as Electric Fence was.
Yeah, that was the one I found most recently, right?
Okay.
I mean, so they're always popping up. And I guess the one we didn't talk about, probably spend like a whole 30 seconds on it, is Valgrind. Valgrind is more of a x86 tool.
Yeah, they have some PowerPC support, but my experience is that it doesn't support a lot of the PowerPC variants. So situations where you have code compiled for particular CPUs, it just still doesn't work. You get illegal instructions when it executes your, special extended instruction. And the way in its architecture, there's really no way around that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is what it is. It's an excellent tool.
You know, it won a bunch of awards, and it's a great tool if you can, again, you know, run your if you're going to run your program on an x86 box anyways as part of the debugging. It's a great tool. It's essentially a virtual machine that runs your application runs under, and that gives it a lot of flexibility to do things that with the other architectures are just not possible to detect. But it also means it's a huge resource hog. It needs a desktop caliber machine to really run and work.
And I know we have some of our, you know, some of the people that I know that the work, I mean, they're targeting PowerPCs that fit into the Valgrind profile, right? It's
And you can certainly use it if the code that you're compiling, it, you know, only conforms to the instruction set that Valgrind, and I've seen even a few patches out there for Valgrind to make it to adhere to certain instruction sets.
Yeah.
But they're kind of unknown origin, so I'm always a little paranoid, I guess, about that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, I know completely.
Yeah.
I know completely. So I think that's what we wanted to talk about today. Thank you very much for filling in.
Yeah, you know, hopefully he'll be back. That's what I should say, but I don't have to do it next week, but I enjoyed it still.
Wow, thanks. Well, I hope you know. So I hope you know that out of the engineers we surveyed for the podcast, you had your headphones on and were listening to music, so you didn't scatter in time. I think that's what really happened.
I just said hi instead of grunting, and all the guys who were grunting, they figured they wouldn't be able to understand what they said on the podcast. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we did have But no, there were some guys like, well, he's like, well, I wrote a driver for this Atmel board and it's new for the screen. And it's like, well, tell me what you did. Well, it does stuff. I'm like,
oh. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
What stuff? It's like, well, you know, then stuff happens. Man, what kind of stuff? You know, stuff. Go away. I guess I wanted to bring up is that we're going to be, TimeSys is going to be at the R-Tech in Dallas on March 25th. And then after that, I think we'll, we have a couple weeks off from being somewhere before they'll send out another marketing minion somewhere with the brochures and everything. So again, thanks a lot. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to drop us a line at podcast@timesys.com. We get a surprising amount of email and we try to respond to every one of them, even the hate mail. We like the hate mail too. And then you can also get, if you want to drop by linuxlinkradio.com, that's where we have our podcast posted. And I think we're working on our second year of podcast. So there's a decent amount of material out there and you can just download. I know it's an AUG and regular format, and it's also available on iTunes too. If you search for, just search for Linux Link Radio, two words, and you can find out what you're looking for. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks everyone.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to TimeSys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.